In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Today we celebrate the memory of one of the greatest saints of the church, and he lived up to his name because his name, Maximus, means greatest. He was born in the year 580, and he reposed around the year 662. And he was born in Constantinople, and he was one of the most brilliant men in church history. He became the first secretary to the emperor, which was one of the most powerful positions in the empire, and all respected him because he was an incredibly sharp and knowledgeable man. Later, he left public life, and he became a simple monk at a monastery. Later, he was made an abbot of that monastery, but he was never ordained to any clerical rank, which is unusual in our times, but it was not unusual in more ancient times. During this time, Patriarch Sergius of Constantinople began to promote what is known as the Monothelite heresy. And the Monothelite heresy was the teaching that Christ had only one will rather than two. And most people nowadays would be scratching their heads saying, well, you know, so what? Well, the reason why it matters is in St. Maximus being a very high-level theologian, saw that this is a very serious deviation from the faith. What is one of our biggest struggles as Christians? Our biggest struggles involve submitting our will to the will of God. And if Christ had only a divine will, that means that that part of human nature was not redeemed with Christ. That's the reason why it's important that Christ had to have both a human will and a divine will. He subordinated his human will to the divine will, but he did it the same way that we're supposed to do it. And so our wills are redeemed with Christ if we allow them to be. This heresy was actually endorsed by Pope Honorius. Patriarch Sergius wrote him a letter talking about this doctrine, and Pope Honorius endorsed it. And for this, he was later anathematized by the entire church, including the Church of Rome. And so when you hear Roman Catholics talking about papal infallibility, well, here's a very good argument as to why that's not true. You have a pope who was asked by his brother bishop about an important doctrinal matter, and he taught incorrectly. He taught erroneously and led the church astray. Now, in the year 638, he passed away, and he was replaced by Pyrrhus, who was shortly deposed after he was made patriarch for palace intrigue reasons, not related to this particular dispute. But St. Maximus, because he saw that the emperor was pushing this issue, and the reason why this was an issue, I should put it into a little bit of context, at the Fourth Ecumenical Council, there was a dispute over the issue of whether Christ had one nature or two natures. So you had the Monophysites, those that teach that Christ had only one nature. This heresy was condemned at that council. But this caused quite a controversy that didn't die with that council, because there were a large chunk of people in certain parts of the church that continued to hold to it, particularly in Egypt, which to this day, the majority of Christians in Egypt are adherents to that teaching. There were a number of efforts made to try to find some way to heal this schism, and that resulted in actual new heresies. And so that's largely what the Fifth and the Sixth Ecumenical Council had to deal with. But the Sixth Ecumenical Council at this point was yet to come. And so the emperor wanted to bring these people back into the church because he wanted to have one empire, one faith. And he needed everybody to be united, because around the same time you began to have Islam on the rise, and it began to be a threat to the empire. St. Maximus, seeing that most of the people in the West, with the exception of the Patriarch of Jerusalem, were submitting to this teaching, went to the West to gather support, because he understood that most of the people in the West were teaching against this, despite the fact that a previous pope had endorsed this heresy. So he went to North Africa. And as it happened, Pyrrhus, who had been deposed, also was exiled to North Africa. And they had a public debate. And St. Maximus, in this debate, was able to convince Pyrrhus that he was wrong. And Pyrrhus even traveled with him to Rome, where he met the Pope at that time, St. Martin. And St. Martin received him gladly. And up to that point, he seemed to be perfectly orthodox. Later on, he was brought back to Constantinople, and he again fell back under pressure to this heresy. But St. Maximus encouraged the bishops of North Africa to hold a council where they condemned this heresy, and then he also went to Rome, and there was another council in Rome which condemned this heresy, the Lateran Council. Sometimes when people talk about St. Maximus and his staunch defense of the faith, you would almost get the idea that St. Maximus was some sort of a Protestant that basically, just like Martin Luther said, "Here I stand, I can do no other, you know, God help me." No, St. Maximus was not a Protestant. He went to those right-believing Orthodox, and he sought their support, and he got it. He explained to them what the issues were, what the heretics were teaching, and he marshaled a big portion of the church to condemn this heresy. But the emperor, still having some sway at this time, had both the Pope and St. Maximus arrested. Interestingly, Pope Martin was exiled to Cherson, which is in Crimea, and there he reposed. So we had a saint, a pope, who reposed in Crimea. St. Maximus was brought to Constantinople, and there were a number of various attempts to try to sway him, and I don't want to go into all the details of the various occasions in which this happened, but just to give you some idea of the kinds of things that he said in response to these various people. And one thing that's important to keep in mind is he was such a compelling theologian and philosopher that in most cases when people came to him, they either had to say, "I can't argue with you," at the end of the day, or else they were actually swayed into agreeing with him before they walked out of there. And that is one of the reasons why we'll find out about what the emperor finally decided to do to him. But St. Maximus said to one of these people trying to sway him, he said, "When I see the Church of Constantinople as she was formerly, then I will enter into communion with her without any exhortation on the part of men." Because they were trying to say, "Look, come back into communion with Constantinople. Don't think that you're greater than everyone else. Don't separate yourself from the church." But he says, "But while there are heretical temptations in her, and while heretics are her bishops, no word or deed will convince me ever to enter into communion with her." And then to a certain Bishop Theodosius, he said to him, "Why did you and your companions put your hands on the Holy Gospel if you did not have a firm intention of fulfilling your vow?" And what he's talking about is the vows they made when they were made bishops. Why did you promise to adhere to the canons? Why did you promise to uphold the Orthodox faith if you weren't going to do it? And that's a question that ought to be asked a number of our bishops in our own time. "Truly, all the host of heaven cannot persuade me to do what you propose. I have to answer not only to God, but to my conscience, if I were to reject the true and saving faith for the sake of empty glory and the adulation of men which are valueless." And to another person said to him, "Have whatever faith you please in your heart. Nobody forbids you." But in other words, you can believe whatever you want. Just keep it to yourself. Shh, you're causing trouble. Here's what St. Maximus said in response to that. He said, "Complete salvation depends not on the faith of the heart alone, but also upon confessing it. For the Lord said, 'Whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven.' Also the divine apostle teaches, 'For with the heart man believes unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation.' If then God and the divine prophets and apostles commanded that the mystery of faith be confessed in words and with the tongue, and this mystery of faith brings salvation to the whole world, then people must not be forced to keep silence with regard to confession, lest the salvation of people be hindered." I can't keep silent. I'm not going to just keep my faith to myself. I have to speak the truth, is what he was saying. Then he had some envoys who came to him, and they were lying, that they tried to convince him that the Pope of Rome had finally come around and that everybody in the church was now opposed to him. He was the last true believer. It wasn't true, but this is what they tried to tell him, and this is what his answer was. What they said was, "What will you do when the Romans, who are united with the Byzantines. Yesterday, indeed, two delegates arrived from Rome, and tomorrow, the Lord's Day, they will have communion of the Holy Mysteries with the Patriarch. St. Maximus replied, "Even if the whole universe holds communion with the Patriarch, I will not have communion with him, for I know from the writings of the Holy Apostle Paul, the Holy Spirit declares that even the angels would be anathema if they should begin to preach another gospel introducing some new teaching." Ultimately, they got tired of trying to sway him because they realized they were not getting anywhere, so then they began to torture him. First, they whipped him severely with a kind of whip that was referred to as a scorpion, probably something along the lines of a cat of nine tails, but a little bit more vicious than that, designed to take pieces of flesh out every time you got hit with it. Then he was dragged through the streets, and the people were told that he was some sort of a heretic that rejected the saints and Christ, and so they spat upon him, not realizing that he was actually standing for the truth. Then they cut out his tongue because they wanted to silence that tongue that was confessing the truth. And then they took a knife and they pounded it through his right wrist and cut off his right hand so that he couldn't write. He was one of the most prolific writers in the history of the church, and they put a stop to that. They couldn't answer his words to his face. They couldn't answer him in writing, so they silenced him. Today, and I think by no coincidence, I think this was God's providence. In Ukraine, we had a schismatic so-called bishop enthroned in Kiev as the Metropolitan of Kiev through the efforts of the Ecumenical Patriarch. The Ecumenical Patriarch is on the new calendar and probably didn't check to see what saint was commemorated today. If he had, he probably wouldn't have done it because the people in Ukraine are on the old calendar. They're celebrating St. Maximus today. Those schismatics did the service to St. Maximus last night and this morning, and then while they did exactly the opposite of what St. Maximus did. Again, you had political rulers with a political agenda concerned about having one nation, one people. And to hell with the faith. We don't care about the fine points of the faith. We're going to go ahead and we're going to just unite. We're going to have one church. We don't care about the canons. We don't care about the traditions. We want everybody to be together because we want to be a strong nation. That's what the agenda was. And you had, unfortunately, bishops then and now who are willing to kowtow to political influence and to give in to that. There are actual errors associated with this. This is not just a matter of violations of the canons. One error that is being promulgated by the Ecumenical Patriarch that is at work in this situation is the heresy of neo-papism. He has made claims of authority that even the Pope himself would be embarrassed to make. Instead of referring to him as the first among equals, as the Orthodox have always talked about him, he has allowed bishops, without correction by him or anyone else, to say, no, he's not the first among equals, he's the first without equals. He's got the right to have an appeal without even bothering to listen to both sides of the case and overturn a deposition and the anathema against a bishop that he had previously endorsed. He had previously said, the Russian church has full competence in the matter. I don't have anything to say about this. We recognize the authority of your decision. Also, it's very interesting to me to note that people in the Orthodox Church that are trying to promote the homosexual agenda all seem to be lining up behind the EP on this issue. And within the EP, there are a number of voices, including clergy who are very close to the EP himself, who have been very soft and squishy on the question of homosexuality. And this false metropolitan, Epiphany, after he was elected at the pseudo-council, was called by two Russian comedians who seemed to do this for fun, but they actually wound up exposing something very important. They pretended to be some sort of a diplomat from a foreign government, and they were talking to him about all their, you know, praising him, talking about how glad they were that they were sticking it to Russia, etc. And one of the issues that they raised was, as they said, and of course we hope that you'll take a much different position about the homosexual issue than the Russian church. And he assured them, oh, don't worry, I'm not going to take the conservative position that the Russian church has taken. Also, there's already been celebrations with the Uniates in the Ukraine by this group after all this has happened. And to me, I don't think that there's any doubt that that's a part of what's going on here. So there are serious errors that are associated with going down this road, but the most basic level of this is it's a disregard of the canons, it's a disregard of the traditions of the church, and there seems to be no concern about basic matters of Christian morality, basic matters of Christian ecclesiology. We have to stand for the truth, and we need to support those people who are standing for the truth in Ukraine. There are people who are having their churches stolen from them every day right now because of what the EP has done in Ukraine. There are people who are being beaten, who are being harassed, and no doubt you will be seeing people killed. And every day it seems to be getting worse, but yet we see people who are standing for the truth, and despite the fact that it's not in their economic interest, despite the fact that they are suffering personally, they are refusing to give in to this, and they are standing for the truth of the traditions of the church, and we need to support them. And unfortunately, the day may be coming in the not-too-distant future where people in this country and elsewhere in the West are going to be forced to make some hard choices, because schisms are unpleasant things, and they divide the church, they break relationships, and it's sad. And we need to pray that God would bring these people to their senses. It's good to want to have good relations with people who are not Orthodox, but it's not good to toss what the differences are out the window so that you can unite with them. We should look at people who are homosexuals or whatever other kind of part of the alphabet these days that are included in the LGBT plus thing. We should look at those people as people who are created in the image of God and for whom Christ died and are worthy of being treated with love and respect. But we don't have to approve of what they're doing. We can't go against what the church teaches. We have to stand for the truth. Because if the truth doesn't matter, then we might as well just stay home on Sunday morning, drink coffee, and watch Meet the Press. There's no reason why we need to be here. There's better things for us to do if the truth doesn't matter. But if the truth does matter, then it's worth fighting for, it's worth dying for. And we need to follow St. Maximus's example. St. Maximus is called the confessor. He wasn't a martyr because he suffered for the faith, but he didn't die as an immediate result of the wounds that he suffered, but he did die in exile several years later. But the Sixth Ecumenical Council affirms St. Maximus the Confessor's teachings. He's a saint of the church, and all of those people who betrayed the faith were anathematized by name and are anathematized to this day. Which side do you want to be on at the end of the day? There's the moment where it might look like one side's better to be on than the other, but we have to look at the eternal. What really matters at the end of the day, and what matters is being with God and not being with political earthly powers. Amen.